Up until his death in 1988, Devine starred in every one of John Waters' movies, usually in the role of a woman. It was the cult classic Pink Flamingos that made Devine famous. If you've seen the film or the publicity stills, then you'll remember the image of Devine's huge frame covered in a skin-tight, low-cut gown. Devine also worked with other directors and considered himself to be a character actor, playing a male gangster in Alan Rudolph's Trouble in Mind, and Tab Hunter's love interest in the Western spoof Lust in the Dust. At the time of his death, Devine was scheduled to have a recurring role in the television sitcom Married with Children. In Hairspray, Devine had two roles, the villainous TV station owner Arvin Hodgepile and the overworked housewife Edna Turnblad. In this scene, Edna is taking her daughter Tracy shopping. They go to Mr. Pinky's hefty hideaway house of fashion for the ample woman to pick out some new clothes for Tracy to wear on the local TV dance show.
Mr. Pinky, I'm Tracy's business manager, Edna Turnblad.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet the both of you. Here we cater to the big bone gals like yourself who are stylish and at the same time frustrated by the lack of sizes in the department stores today. I saw you on TV. I want you to be my model.
Would she be paid for this?
One free outfit a month. You start tomorrow. I hope there's no diets in the works because I want to design your Miss Otto Show coronation gown myself.
Could you throw in a pair of complimentary petty pants in the deal?
You drive a hard bargain, Miss Edna, and rightfully so. Petty pants, panty girdle, you just let Tracy take her pick.
It's a deal. Thank you, Mr. Pinky.
I'm going to make you a star.
Let's talk about your roles in Hairspray. You really make a very sympathetic, beleaguered housewife. You know, really, you play the role with such empathy for the part. Did you know a lot of women like that? Women who were too busy to do anything because there was still ironing to do.
Oh, well, I didn't know any of them personally. My mother certainly wasn't like that. I mean, if there was a party, the ironing would have to wait. But not that she wasn't a good mother and a good wife, but she's a good time girl, too. But and there are women out there. I would see them, friends, mothers, and in different situations. So sure, they're out there, a lot of them.
A part of the movie is about hairdos, about the great teased bouffant hairdos of the early 60s. And I know John Waters is really enamored with those old hairdos. You used to be a hairdresser, didn't you?
Well, for a very short time. I'm glad I had that experience. It's come in very helpful now. Because when I'm on the road and things during my club act, there aren't always hairdressers available or things. So I end up having to do it myself. And I said, I'm glad I know how to tease because that's definitely the look they want. But I said to John, he doesn't have to go too far from his front door, actually, to still see women that look just like that. When I was doing the film, it was very funny because the first day on the set, I walked down the street. No one looked at me twice. I walked right through the camera crew, past John, and kept going. None of them looked at me. I came back and stood right in front of John. He looked at me, and he did a double take. It was very funny. He said, I can't believe it. That's perfect. So I looked just like one of the girls on the street.
How did that make you feel?
Oh, it was good. I mean, that was the best compliment. I mean, I did fit right in. I did look exactly the way I was supposed to. And because so often with my size and things, I'm so, not uptight, but about sticking out too much.
Self-conscious?
You know? Yeah, self-conscious. Yeah, about sticking out too much and being the largest person on the set. But then in a way, that's the best thing to do, I guess. You get noticed more.
Let's talk about the male part that you played, and this is a kind of bad guy type part, a kind of villain part. He's the head of the TV studio who doesn't want to stand for integration. Now John Waters told me you got fitted for new teeth for this role.
Yeah, well, they wanted me to look completely different, which is the great part of being a character actor, to look like the characters and to look different from yourself. That's why I said I never cared about looking always glamorous as a woman, which I always thought set me aside from being a drag queen or whatever, because I certainly looked anything but glamorous as Edna, with the long string of oily hair. So in the same way, when they fitted me for teeth, big bucked teeth that had decay and things on them, then I had brown, because I have blue eyes. They poked me in the eye every morning for about 15 times, trying to get these brown contacts in my eyes. And then I wore a toupee, which is the kind of hairstyle that men that are balding and they sweep it up from the bottom and over the top, mm-hmm. which really doesn't cover anything up, but they think it does in their own mind. And you can see the skin in between the hair, you know, a real dark brown because they usually dye their hair. So it was quite hideous, and with a little blue cord suit or whatever and suspenders. And
it's great you had to put on as much makeup to do this male part as you did to do the female
part.
More.
It took longer. I used to pray to be Edna again. There were a couple of days when I had to be both, and I was running around with Edna's wig on and great big teeth sticking out of my mouth. I'd say, wait a minute, give us those teeth. Because you got, you know, after a while, you jump out of one into the other so fast, you forget to take half the costume off.
You know, it's funny, whenever you play the man, it seems to be the heavy that you're playing. Even in John Waters' film Female Trouble, in which you play a man and a woman, the man's, you know, a real kind of tough guy, bad guy type. In Trouble in Mind, you played a gangster.
Yeah, I think I'm stuck with playing just hideous people, you know, except for like Edna. She was like I said, sweet, kind.
You know, you got started acting working with John Waters, and basically I think you were both still in school when you started. You were working with what, Super 8 film?
Oh yeah.
Shooting on the streets of Baltimore. It's not like you had come out of you know, Yale School of Drama or something like that. You had this great theatrical background that you were going to draw on for your character roles. Did you ever decide, once you really got into acting, that you wanted to go to acting school? Did you ever feel like you needed that or that would help you in any way?
Well, sure, I thought about all of those things, but whenever I did talk to anyone about it, they said, no, you have a natural talent, you have a natural ability to make people laugh, you have wonderful comic timing. And I sound like I'm sitting here blowing my own horn, but these are things that they told me. And I went to some very reputable acting coaches and people, and they didn't want to take me on. And they said, if something works, you know, don't fix it. Just go with it. And you just got to have the confidence and things to believe in yourself and to keep doing it. And you'll do it. So that's what I've done.
Did you love movies when you were growing up? What were some of your favorite films?
Oh, I've always had a very macho taste in movies. My favorites then when I was a kid were those Knights of the Round Table movies and war movies. And,
really?
Yeah. I still like a good war movie. I mean, Platoon and all those movies I loved. And I really do like Rambo movies and Sylvester Stallone. And Charles Bronson, I think, is probably my favorite.
So you probably really enjoy playing heavies when you get the chance to do that.
Yeah. I like to play in some of those movies, you know, where they kill 150 people in the first 2 minutes of film. It really does relieve, you know, any frustrations you might have, I think.
So you liked really war movies and action films. Did you like glamour movies when you were growing up?
Well, anything that Elizabeth Taylor was in, I liked.
Did you like her better when she was thin or heavy?
It didn't matter to me.
Uh-huh.
Didn't matter. I thought it was just more of her to look at when she got heavy. But still very beautiful. And I finally did meet her one day, and I couldn't speak at all. After years of planning what I was going to say to her, I was... Blah, 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 blah. I don't drink, but I went and had a double scotch and came back and had a little conversation with her.
Did she know you?
She knew of me. It was a party for her daughter, Maria, and her hairdresser and makeup man, a man, were people that I've used, and they had told her all about me, so she wanted to meet me at the party.
That's great that you'd use the same makeup man.
Yeah. We look a lot alike.
You know, John Waters has said that he really has always loved it when people who don't fit mainstream good looks take what they have and really turn it into style, turn it into, you know, an advantage. Did you feel like you were doing that when you were growing up? Because you were, I think you were always pretty heavy.
Yeah, well, no, actually not, because I was very much an introvert, and I never really went out of the house till I was about 16 years old. I was very uptight about my weight and about the way I looked, and always wanted to look like everyone else. And finally, my junior year, like when I was 16 and in high school, is when I really started hanging out with John and everyone else, that I got the confidence together to go out. And I was always in a coat. I always had a raincoat on or something. People probably thought I was a flasher, but I was just uptight about, you know, how fat I was. But at the same time, couldn't or wouldn't do anything about it. Finally, I went on a diet, like I said, my junior year, and lost to 80 pounds and went down to 145 and for my senior year. And then I was able to get dates and go to the prom and everything. But still, it was strange to me, because all of a sudden people talked to me. They wouldn't talk to me when I was fat. And I thought, well, what's this all about? You know, it was a rude awakening, actually, at a very young age.
So it must have been really liberating in a way when you started playing these extravagant roles where your weight was really a part of the role and you were very theatrical about your size and theatrical about the way you dressed.
Oh, yeah. Well, John did help me, I mean, to gain a lot of self-confidence and to be proud and not to fit the mold that I think they really do try to put you on, especially here in America, that you've got to be thin, you've got to be, you know, under 200 pounds. And I mean, you don't. I mean, there are a lot of big people out there that are still very beautiful people, you know. As I think, as long as you're clean and neat, this is fine, you know.
The late actor Divine, speaking with Terry Gross in 1988. The new musical Hairspray opens on Broadway next week. We'll hear more from Divine and John Waters in the second half of our show. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. The new Broadway musical Hairspray opens next week. It's based on the film by John Waters. Let's continue now Terry's 1988 interview with the late actor Divine, who starred in Hairspray and all of Waters' movies until his death shortly after Hairspray premiered.
I think when you and Waters started working together, you had a lot of exploits, both in the kinds of movies that you did and in the kind of parties that you gave, and shoplifting, from what I've read. But it seems to me like you were part of this, very kind of avant-garde theatrical type of, into a theatrical kind of juvenile delinquency, as opposed to being like the real hoods.
Oh, yeah, we weren't really bad, you know. I think we were just bored, and we were young teenagers from your upper middle class families with nothing to do. I mean, I think the movies actually grew out of that situation also.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were making movies, we were locking each other in the trunks of our convertible cars and letting our friends out at the drive-in movies. And we'd drink a beer every now and then, which was, I guess, could be one of the worst things we ever did. We were never into any heavy drug scenes or into anything really, like I said, really bad that we would have to go to jail for, except a few bits of shoplifting. But I mean, all the kids did it, and so it was, I guess, a bit of peer pressure there about that, you know. But that was curbed too. I mean, it wasn't an everyday occurrence, and basically, we were good kids.
How did the tough guys in the school treat you? The people who really were the hoods.
Oh, well, I wasn't. They used to wait for me every day to beat me up after school. And to the point where I was quite black and blue and afraid to say anything because they had threatened my life. And it was very bad. And finally, one day, I had to go for a physical to the doctor. And when I disrobed, I mean, it was quite obvious that something terrible was happening to me. And finally, I broke down after a lot of questioning and told him what the problem was. And they called my parents, and when they saw what I looked like, they were quite hysterical. And we had the police at the school, and the kids were expelled. And it was quite an ugly situation, which made me even more unpopular with their friends and the other people, you know. But so I had to go through, like I said, the next 2 years of school with that stigma attached to me. But then I think finally, like I said, in my senior year, it was more or less all right. It wasn't so bad. But up until then, it was quite hideous, and I really hated school, and I hated the whole situation.
Have you ever gotten the chance to see any of those guys who beat you up since you've become a famous actor?
I have. I've seen them in theaters that I've played.
Have you really?
Yeah, and different situations, and I don't think they actually knew who I was.
Oh, that's too bad. You.
I knew that I had, in a way, had the last laugh. It did make me feel good, because I'm never the type of person to seek revenge and things, But they said they did really mess my mind up for a while, and my teenage years, you know, which were supposed to be the best years of your life.
You said that it was John Waters who gave, you know, who helped give you your image.
Right.
How did you decide on what that image was going to be when you first were getting
it together? Well, at the time, there were Andy Warhol, and a lot of people were making cult movies, and as they called them, underground films then, which were just the equivalent of your independently made movies today, low budget. And so the one name, like Viva, was very popular. So John gave me the name Divine. He just said he thought I was, and it was that I was funny and that I was divine, and it was a good name for me. And also because he had a very heavy Catholic upbringing, we had sort of religious names. So I don't know. Of course, the names became more popular again today with Madonna and Cher and Prince and Princess and all of these people. But did I go off the subject?
No. And then when you were getting like this... Well, excuse me?
I couldn't remember what the question was.
About forming the image when...
Yeah, so the thing with John wanted a very large woman because, as you had said before, he wanted the exact opposite of what normally would be beautiful. He wanted a 300-pound beauty as opposed to a 110-pound beauty. He wanted, as I've been called, an inflated Jane Mansfield. that's what he got. And also, it's ironic that he would say the most beautiful woman in the world turns out to be a man. So everything there is backwards. So it's really a John Waters character. But then Van Smith, a very good friend of ours, who does all of John's movies, he does the makeup and costuming, and has done off, helped create the look for the character. He's the one that said, go in the bathroom, shave your head halfway back, and pluck all your eyebrows out. So, I mean, you really got to trust people. I went in the bathroom and did this. Came out, and I thought, what have I done now? But then he did my face almost like he always called a beauty gone berserk. And it was similar to kabuki type makeup.
Oh, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, but the work that he does is quite beautiful. And also, we didn't want to look like a normal, everyday woman, because I'm not a woman. We wanted to look more like a cartoon character, you know, of a woman.
Had you dressed in drag before doing it for movies?
No, I think a couple times on Halloween or something. You know, I was Martha Washington once, I remember.
I'm just going to ask you one question about the famous Pink Flamingo scene in which the movie ends, and just one question about it, and then you have to eat a fresh dog turd, and you and John Waters have both said that you did it to kind of get attention, and the film really did. I mean, you were real upcoming people.
Well, John came to me and he said, well, you know, would you do this? I said, oh, sure. I thought he was kidding. And a year later, he said, okay, now tomorrow you have to eat the dog turd. I thought, oh, this is great. He wasn't kidding, you know. And he said, well, listen, do you want to be famous or do you want to be completely forgotten about? He said, it's going to do either one or the other for you. It's going to make you or forget. You said, your name will go down in movie history forever anyway, no matter what you do. And I thought, well, what do I care? You know, I was very young and you don't think about all these things. And I didn't really think about it until I had to follow that dog around for 3 hours. And finally it went and... It was quite a hideous experience, actually.
Well, here's my question. Did you rush off to an emergency room afterwards?
Well, no,
I
went home.
That's a silly question, but I'd be wondering about, you know, germs and things like
that. Well, I had mouthwash and things, and I brushed my teeth and goggled. Anyway, I went home, and I was sitting there. And the more I thought about it, then I started to worry. So I called the hospital, and I'll never forget this. And I didn't know what to tell them, you know, because I was a bit old running around eating dog feces, you know. So I called and I said, oh, hello, this is Mrs. Johnson and my son just ate dog duty. And what should I do? And she said, well, how old is your son? And I said, well, he's, you know, 24 years old. Well, then the nurse said, some maniac's on the phone here. Her son's 24 and he's eating dogs. So... I got back on the phone. She said, well, why? And I had to tell her, well, I said that he was retarded and that we had a dog and he was in the backyard playing with the dog. The dog had gone to the bathroom and he'd eaten the dog mess, you know. So she said, well, you just have to wash his mouth out and, you know, do all this. She said, but feel his stomach every day because he could get what was called the, you know, like a worm, a white worm. And every day I was feeling my stomach to see if it was funny. One day it got hard, and I thought, oh, my God, I've got it. But I had hysterical white worms as it was. I didn't have anything. So I was very lucky. But she suggested that I get rid of the dog.
Well, I know John Waters wants to do a sequel. You wouldn't go through that again for a sequel, would you?
No. I said, do I have to stand under an elephant the next time? Forget it. I had to draw the line somewhere. So I said that was my last experience with animals, please.
The Late Divine, speaking with Terry Gross in 1988. In the Broadway musical Hairspray, Divine's character, Edna Turnblad, is played by Harvey Fierstein. This is Fresh Air.